7:42. So the US government's partial shutdown has entered a third week. No clear breakthrough in sight. President Donald Trump has been playing particularly tough with Democratic leaders. Famous quotes coming from him included, bye-bye. I mean, this is the level of discourse that we're currently looking at, which many people will have been frustrated at, of course. But he's also said very clearly, like 8 hours ago, he just said, make America great again. It's this kind of rhetoric that seems to both appeal to his fans and prompt their great applause, but has left Democrat leaders, scratching their heads, for want of a better cliche. So with the continued US government shutdown, government workers will miss their first paycheck tomorrow. And is this shutdown even going to produce the border wall, for example, that Trump wants? Here on the line first with us, we have Ms. Tara Kopp, Pentagon Bureau Chief of Military Times Newspapers. Thank you for joining us.
Sure, thanks for having me.
And if this continues until Saturday, which is just around the corner, of course, tomorrow for us already here in Korea, it would be the longest government shutdown in US history, breaking that record from 1995. How are things currently there? What does this shutdown really mean for your average US citizen?
Well, I live in Washington, D.C., and for us it's meant a lot of less traffic on the road, trash building up, a lot of people staying home. But, across the nation, there are much more noticeable effects, especially for those who travel, with the number of TSA agents, the people that will frisk you to make sure that you aren't bringing anything dangerous on an airplane. They're calling in sick. There's thousands and thousands of veterans who have disability ratings and can't get their benefits. There's a bunch of flight inspectors who can't work right now, which earlier this week prompted United Airlines and Delta Airlines pilots to send a letter requesting the president end the shutdown because it would make flights more dangerous. So there's thousands of everyday impacts. If you look at like food safety, thousands of our food inspectors, the people that make sure that there's no E. coli bacteria, that often catch it in like salads or meat or whatever, those people are also off the job. And so there's this cumulative effect that could be quite dangerous if this keeps going.
So when President Trump walks out of a meeting with Democratic leaders and is accused of throwing a temper tantrum and uses the words bye-bye, how does that play out for people living with the concerns you just outlined?
Well, unfortunately, I think that the entire nation right now is so politically polarized that people really view those comments through their own political lens. I'm quite lucky through reporting on the military that it stays quite apolitical. However, it's found itself, kind of stuck in the middle, especially with the border wall, on staying apolitical, doing what the president has requested because he is the commander-in-chief, but knowing that there's, very heated views on both sides of this issue.
President Trump has said he will probably declare a national emergency. What would
that's
that
the latest, but with this president, he says one thing one day and then changes his mind the next day and says he never said it. So, possibly he will declare a national emergency, or if he sees a development shake out his way, maybe a compromise will be made between the two parties, and there won't need to be a national emergency declared. He could get that funding for his wall through a national emergency, but it would come out of other buckets of money from the Defense Department. So what they would have to do is they'd have to go into the military construction budget and see what funds have not been spent yet, and also what funds have been unobligated. So it's kind of money they can shake loose from other programs. And that could be anything from, schools on U.S. bases throughout the world. It could be, new housing for families. The MILCON budget is huge, and it funds projects at military bases all over the globe.
We talk about military bases and defense budgets. We've also got great concern there, don't we, with Jim Mattis his departure, but also in a matter of weeks, three senior defense officials, including Pentagon Chief of Staff Kevin Sweeney, quitting their jobs. And there's just one issue after another there. Can you give us a sense of that situation from your own perspective?
Sure. There is definitely a power vacuum right now. There are people who have, you know, found themselves by surprise in new top positions, not only just acting Defense Secretary Shanahan, but now his number two, and then also, you know, all of the support staff that are underneath those people. So, for instance, when Mattis left, not only did his chief of staff leave, but his chief spokesperson, Dana White, also left, and all of a sudden the people that had been supporting them are kind of elevated into a top spot. And I think everyone's just kind of finding their way. We have seen Shanahan one or two times this last week, but you know, he's not ready to talk to us yet in a full-fledged press conference. I think he's still trying to also feel his way on these major issues. With Sweeney's departure, I wouldn't read too much into it. A chief of staff is, you know, primarily picked by a defense secretary, and it's not surprising to see, you know, someone who was there as a trusted aide depart when the principal departs.
Yeah, I guess when there's a series of departures, you start to see a trend, and when you start to see a trend, you start to look for factors that join them all together. Ms. Tara Kopp, thank you very much for joining us, first of all, today.
Sure. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw more departures in the future. I don't think everything's shaken out yet.
Well, I'm not sure that's what President Trump meant when he talked about clearing the swamp once upon a time. Dr. Andrew Bacevich, Professor Emeritus of International Relations and History at Boston University, now joins us to view this from another angle. Thank you for joining us.
I'm glad to be with you.
And the president has been threatening to declare this national emergency as part of a strategy to force the wall on the country. Some welcome that, some don't. What is the likelihood of that, and what would its impact be in your view?
I don't know if it's likely or not. What I would say is, if he goes that route, it will elicit even greater resistance. Certainly would be challenged in court. And so I doubt that it would achieve his objective, which is to generate enough funding for this wall and deliver on that campaign promise. I think he's really backed himself into a corner. Of course, so have the Democrats, hence this government shutdown. But were I advising the president, I would not advise him to declare a national security emergency.
This is a country, though, that has been through so much division over decades, over centuries, and continues to be seriously politically polarized. Do you fear that some of those tensions could spill out beyond the framework of legal courts, for example, if the president was to push his opponents that far?
Yeah. I mean, I think your little thumbnail description of American history is exaggerated. It's not that we have been uniformly divided. There have been times when the country's been really impressively united. There are other times when division appears. It is certainly the case that right now, the division is, I think, profound. And that does raise the danger of somebody going a step too far and causing a violent reaction. It would seem that the propensity for violence tends to be in the camp of Trump supporters. And I think that one of the real dangers here is that Democrats howling for Trump to be impeached really ought to calculate what the aftermath of impeachment would be for the country. Because the 60-plus million people who voted for Trump, I'm certainly not one of them, but the 60 million people who voted for Trump will, I think, react strongly if they have the perception that the results of the election are being improperly overturned. So it could be, under some circumstances, that impeachment will occur in the future. It's my hope that if there is any move toward impeachment, that the people who are promoting that view will be absolutely 100% sure that the effort is undertaken consistent with the Constitution. That's the most important thing here.
Yeah. I mean, I personally don't feel that the country, by the way, is on the verge of some sort of division spilling out into physical conflict, but it just seems from the outside, to elaborate a little further, that some of the ingredients of past conflict around the world, including in the US, are boiling slightly. You have, for example, this common enemy being generated often in the rhetoric of President Trump, but you also have a seemingly unnegotiable scenario at political level and a standoff that has no end in sight. How do you see this playing out?
Well, I think your characterization of boiling slightly is probably about right. It's not boiling over, but it is a somewhat dangerous time. I think that one of the troubling aspects of the situation is that, of course, the president is, in my judgment, completely incompetent and is temperamentally unsuited for the office that he holds. But if you look beyond the president, sort of survey the other people who are holding positions that would somehow suggest that they are leaders of the nation, I don't see the qualities in those people to help figure out a way out. And so what we have, specifically with regard to the government shutdown, is both sides digging in, both sides believing that there's a political advantage for them to keep digging in, and there's not a heck of a lot of sort of enlightened leadership trying to figure out how to get out of this situation. So I think that the vacuum of leadership, which goes beyond Trump himself, is a large part of the problem.
And here we are in this part of the world, just briefly, because we are short on time, but we are anticipating, in fact relying on Trump to lead some sort of breakthrough with North Korea. How can he possibly be focused on the very delicate needs of that task when he's got this going on at home?
Well, I don't think the president has the ability to focus on anything for a very long period of time. His brain doesn't seem to work the way the brain of previous presidents worked. He's not deliberate, he's not thoughtful, and therefore, in a immensely complicated situation like the division of the Korean Peninsula, I don't know that he really has the capacity to engage with that question in a serious way. I'm not a Korea watcher, but it seems to me that we're more likely to see progress made based on the initiatives of the South Korean president rather than anything that the American president says or does.
Well, many people here would like to see that happen. I think President Moon's own advisor here, Moon Jae-in, said the other day in a famous podcast show here that if South Korea was allowed to take the lead, we'd see a lot more progress. The problem, of course, is that just like with the standoff with the Democrats, President Trump seems, regardless of his critics, to hold some important cards. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you on the line.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Dr. Andrew Bacevich there from Boston University. Again, you can get in touch with us. There is, honestly, a lot of exaggeration about these issues, and it's difficult in the time that we have available to kind of go fully in depth. But it does look, doesn't it, like we are in a rather extreme circumstance in the US, and that does seem to have potentially some pretty harmful repercussions for foreign policy, not least for us here in South Korea. Again, you can find us poundsharp 1013 for 51 per message. You can tweet us at EFM This Morning, and the show continues after BBC World News.